I think we have Jeff now. So one of the great writers. He is not only a guy that's one of the gold standard writers here in the U.S., but he's been doing it for a long time, tremendous experience. He joins us now. Jeff, you have me nervous there for a minute.
Hey, sorry about that, Glenn. I don't know what happened, but we're connected now, okay. So all good.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show, and thank you very much for coming on. Shed a little light, first off, just as much as you know, and I know you've been on top of this subject, but the Players Union, Major League Soccer, you know, we're hearing and seeing some of these articles coming out that, you know, it was a little bit caustic here at the end. Maybe just give us a little synopsis of the whole scenario with it from your viewpoint.
Yeah, well, I think you have to start with the CBA that was at least the framework of which was agreed on last February. You know, at that time, you know, it was almost a kumbaya moment. You know, the players were happy. I think the league was happy. It looked like there was going to be labor peace for the next 5 years. And then, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and that seemed to change everything. And I think critically, neither side ratified that CBA that was agreed on in February. So that left MLS with an opening to not only renegotiate some terms of the CBA, but also request some economic concessions for 2020, in addition to, you know, the whole return to play plan, which was going on for Orlando. So, MLS floated some proposals. I think the first one was, you know, for a $150 million salary cut, you know, across the board. There would have been exceptions for some of the low-wage earners in the league, but, you know, it would have been a pretty steep cut, especially when you consider that the players had already been paid for the first 3-4 months of this year. So, you know, that was where it began. The two sides, you know, engaged in some back and forth. The force majeure clause, which would allow the league to impose some pretty draconian terms, you know, in the case of a pandemic or some kind of crazy event, that was inserted. In the end, you know, we're talking about over $100 million in economic concessions that the players made. But right at the tail end, to kind of force the deal over the line, you know, the league threatened a lockout. And that really, you know, that really just set the players off. They had avoided that kind of talk for most of the negotiations, although I think the players always feared that the league might go down that road. Right at the end, the league threatened a lockout. The players didn't like it one bit. I'm not sure how much good it did because, you know, the two sides were already kind of moving towards an agreement in terms of, you know, the percentage of salary cut and the changes to the revenue sharing plan, you know, the next time a broadcast rights deal is negotiated. All of that was kind of moving towards the center. And so in the end, the two sides agreed, but, you know, the players are very bitter about the way the league conducted themselves. You know, I think they realized they gave up a lot. Just in terms of the economics. And so now they're heading to Orlando, or at least at some point in the next few weeks, the teams are going to head to Orlando, and the players are not going to be in the best frame of mind in terms of their attitude and their feelings, I should say, towards management.
Yeah, interesting. We're talking to Jeff Carlisle, ESPN FC. He's a great follow on Twitter, at Jeffrey Carlisle. So let's talk a little bit about Orlando. Do you think some of the details about Orlando are being put in place as we get closer and closer to that date? How firm do you think things are down there? How firm do you think plans for protocol are? And, take us into that a little bit, because the whole protocol thing is that is a study and a concentration in itself.
Absolutely. I'm told that, you know, in terms of the testing of the players and staff, you know, all of that has been basically, you know, fleshed out. There isn't much disagreement on that. You know, initially there was a plan for a one-week quarantine, but I'm not hearing anything about that, or at least I haven't heard anything about that in the last couple weeks. And this all kind of comes as the teams are able to train more in their home markets. And I think that was a pretty key development just for the overall planning of this. I mean, initially it was looking like the players and staff are going to be gone for 10 weeks. And you think about it, a World Cup is like 6 weeks. And maybe when you tack on, you know, like a pre-World Cup camp, it's another 2 weeks that are added to it. So that's 8 weeks. So this would have been 2 weeks beyond that. But ultimately, you know, the players in the league were able to agree on a shorter time frame. And now I think depending on the team and how much they're able to train in their home markets, you know, some teams aren't planning on going down there until the end of this month. You know, maybe like a week before the games start. They might even not arrive until the very first days of July. So, you know, I think that's where things stand. You know, I think the plans are coming together. And, you know, from what I hear, you know, the union is satisfied with the actual testing protocols that are in place. I mean, there had been some concern about, you know, hey, what's going to happen with hotel staff? You know, they're going home at night. And then coming in, you know, to the hotel every day, you know, and then, you know, how are meals going to be handled? How are those going to be prepared? So, but from what I gather, just the last, I think, little bit of minor details are still left to be done. But, you know, from what I can hear, that it's done to the union satisfaction. So, I think we're all.
But that's a good question. What are
hospitals want to go?
Yeah, what is staff going to do? I mean, if they just go home to their families, you don't have any idea what they're doing, where they're going. They could be going out at night, you know, to an environment with a lot of people and then coming back into the hotel. That's not quarantine.
I mean. Exactly. And I think there's been a lot of concern about that. And Florida has been one of the states that has been, I think, most aggressive about opening up. Now, granted, when you look at the COVID-19 cases in that state, most of them have been in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, you know, Palm Beach, those areas. But, you know, listen, anytime you've got a pandemic like this, you know, hot spots can pop up at any time. And they have been doing more testing, and so that has resulted in more cases. But still, I think there still is worry just about the worst-case scenario. I think the league has been intent on projecting and talking about the best case scenario. Hey, like if, you know, if someone tests positive, you know, here's what's going to happen. They're going to be separated, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm left to wonder, you know, is there a tipping point where, you know, this could all go sideways? You know, how many positive cases would it take before the league would say, hey, we may have to pull the plug on this. So, that's still left to be determined. That's still unknown, I would say, at this point. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the players have some legitimate concerns, but at this stage, they want to continue to get paid, and you know, we're talking about a solid chunk of the league, you know, about 25% that makes 100 grand or less. So, you know, these guys can't afford to miss too many paychecks. The owners can. Now, granted, they're hurting in their own way, but you know, as far as the players are concerned, you know, they do kind of feel like they've been forced into this, and I think that's also another source of bitterness in terms of the players' attitude towards the league.
At Jeffrey Carlisle on Twitter, ESPN FC writer. Overall health of Major League Soccer. Look, we were all juiced up, 25th year celebration of the league. I mean, you've been covering this league forever, and the national team and soccer in general. Where was the health of Major League Soccer prior to this? And then this COVID-19 virus, how shaky did it make things?
I think it made it really shaky. I mean, just, you know, continuing to talk to sources, you know, in the U.S. soccer landscape, you know, I the more I talk to people, the more that billion-dollar amount that Don Garber alluded to in his conference call last week, that's looking like a real number. I mean, I keep hearing about teams losing, you know, 40 to 50 million. You know, we'll see what the rest of the year brings. You know, we'll see the extent to which games are able to be held in home markets. You know, the extent to which it might be opened up to fans, whether it's, you know, a quarter capacity, half capacity, things like that. I think prior to that, the health was great. You know, I think, you know, the owners were satisfied with the CBA in February. But, you know, obviously everything has been turned upside down just in terms of, you know, society in general, you know, sports, everything. And so now, you know, I'm not hearing anything at the moment about owners being in absolute dire straits, but I mean, this has been a major hit. I mean, if you're losing, you know, your business is losing 40 to 50 million, I mean, that's, you know, that's per team, and that's a ton of money by just about any evaluation. So I think the sooner the league gets back in the field, obviously, the sooner some revenues are going to start coming in again. And, you hope that the league can recover. But I think it's going to take a while. I think it's going to be a while before, you know, MLS gets back to where it was, you know, say in February.
Last one before we let you go, at Jeffrey Carlisle, ESPN FC. Just some great information here from you, as always, Jeff. The NWSL, basically, is this tournament that's going to be played in Utah, is that keeping the league alive?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, some sponsors have chipped in. I mean, I think that's huge. And I think even from a perception standpoint, the fact that the league is going to be one of the first to come back, I mean, I just think that's going to give the league a big boost. They seem to avoid a lot of the labor strife that MLS dealt with. There just seemed to be more of a kind of an all-for-one, one-for-all type of emotion surrounding this tournament in Utah. So, I think, we could see NWSL come out of this, you know, just in a better spot. I think just more attention, more eyeballs. And, you know, it was already, I think, you know, some momentum generated just coming into this. You know, there's just been a lot more attention on the women's game, obviously with the U.S. women winning the World Cup last year. There just continues to be more and more attention on the women's game, and I think that's great. I mean, I think the more people you get interested in this, in soccer, regardless of the avenue that it is, you know, the better it's going to be for the game. Obviously, there's some issues still to be settled out with the equal pay lawsuit, and we'll see where that goes. But, I just sense there's more optimism, you know, surrounding the women's game at the moment. Granted, it's on a relative scale. I mean, the investment required isn't as big as it is in MLS. But I do think this tournament that's coming up is a huge opportunity for the NWSL.
Well, as always, thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on the show. Great insight from you, as always. ESPN FC's Jeff Carlisle, at Jeffrey Carlisle. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on, making the time for me and the program.
Absolutely, Glenn, anytime.
All right, you're the best. Jeff Carlisle.